Welcome to the show, cycling fans. World Championships, an American Renaissance transfer market update. We're going to go over the ins and outs of who's on what team and who's going where. An esports scandal rocks the cycling world. Or does it? Some things that make you go, So we'll pick some winners and losers. And what was it that Kurt said? I am Tyler Yonke, and this is the Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 146. All right, everybody, thanks for joining, and sorry about the long hiatus. Yes, we've had some time off from cycling, doing the podcast. I hope you missed us. We missed you. I've been busy with work, busy with a little bit of vacation and travel. You know, look, I took a quick trip to Cabo, and line everything up. You're going to be gone. You make sure everything's fine. You go, ignore work the whole time, and come back, and it's like inundated with like over-the-top work. When you come back trying to catch up. So that's been my life. So sorry I missed out on this. Look, it's winter time. Cycling's going to be kind of waning down. Supposedly there's always something going on. And with that, you know, the hope is, hey, I'm going to do some more big interviews. I'm going to get Chris and Kurt in here. I could just put this on a repeat because that's always my goal. But I do enjoy this, and that is the goal. I talked to some people. I do have some plans. It's just difficult trying to coordinate schedules. And you know, if I come to them or whatever, we're going to try to do some big things. As always, my biggest enjoyment, one, I just love to produce the news and to talk about all this. That's fun. But the best thing is to have people come in and to do some interviews. It's one of my biggest joys. We'll try to, I'll try to get back with Mike Sayers. He's been traveling the world. I think he's at World Championships. He's been doing a bunch of stuff with the U23s and the juniors. They blew it up this year at World Championships. And we'll get his input. I'm sure he'll be willing to come in and talk to us about that. What did Kurt say? Well, Kurt Mills, our esteemed colleague and co? He's not in here. He hasn't been in here for a while, but he's definitely part of this podcast. He commented the other day about Cameron Jeffers being banned. We'll get to that news story, but I'm going to up front just talk about his comment. He's like, some weird cyber cheating. He said, that's odd to punish through British cycling, given Froome is doped to the gills. I don't know your proof for that, Kurt, but gills? Okay. Let's do a recap of World Cycling, World Championships. Cycling, it was in Yorkshire and the UK. Started off with some really bad, you know, like we did a little bit of a previous show. They had a weird team mixed gender time trial. I compared it to the Hammer series type of thing, which I got some comments about that as well. But then the weather turned pretty bad, and after the time trial, then there was individual time trials, and it showed some of these riders going through big, massive ponds, it looked like, trying to do their time trial and wiping out due to actually these big, huge ponds in the middle of the road, puddles. So it was pretty bad. But point is, hey, what are you going to do? It's Yorkshire. It's the UK in the fall. Are you expecting rain? Of course you're expecting rain. But anyway, I digress. It ended up being okay for most of the road races and, you know, some cooler weather. And anyway, we'll get back to it. So the UCI has their road world championships. They have a new thing now. They used to have a team time trial. Then they had trade team time trials. Now they're going back to country time trials, but it's mixed gender. So what they've done is they have three men and three women. And they had, I'm trying to remember the details on the circuit, like a 14 mile or so. And the men do a lap, and then they come back and they hand off basically to the women, go in, and then they do the finishing lap. And the combined time, you know, for the two laps is what the winner gets. And the Netherlands comes through in blazing glory in their time of 38:28 over Germany, 23 seconds, Great Britain of 51 seconds, Italy at 56. On down, no American team participated. They had a UCI World Cycling Center combined team 3 minutes back. I mean, look, France at 5 minutes. Trying to remember, there was one team that had a flat. Maybe it was not sure. I don't remember the country. Tell you the truth, but they would have been. It might have been the Germans or the Great Britain. Maybe I don't know. One of the women flatted. She had to chase back on. and kind of cost them some of the race. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's the way it is. Maybe if they had four riders, because I think they had to have two cross the line. So it was a little bit tough there. Was it exciting? Now, look, it was cool to see the men and women kind of combining. And the way that they've done this is about the best I think you can do for a mixed gender type of event. Was it exciting? It was a little bit better than, you know, the team seemed to be really pumped up about what it is. Do they get to wear any special jersey or for this? No, that's part of the problem. I think they get a sticker that goes on their bus, so that's kind of cool. And, you know, they're part of this whole genre of new team time trial thing coming through. As we'll go through some of the results here in the road race and the time trials, you wonder why the Americans didn't field the team, and a little bit disappointing. You know, you don't, some of these riders, some of these teams, you didn't have to necessarily have their A1 riders that were doing all these other events. I don't think, I don't know how the selection process was, but you probably could have fielded it. There probably would have been some Americans that can time trial that would have been interested in this. And does it look, they've done this before where, you have your time trialing at Worlds, and your results from there actually give you the number of spots in the Olympics. So we've had before where this men are having like one or two spots for the Americans in the time trial at the Olympics. And I think it even correlates to the, I don't think it correlates to the road race actually. But anyway, I know it did for the time trialing, and you had no Americans participating, or hardly the big Americans participating at Worlds. And at the time, Taylor Finney was one of the only Americans that was really going for, and he would, you know, get a top 20 at Worlds in the time trial. He's not participating this year. I mean, that's like his one thing, time trial, and he's not doing it this year, because those kind of things help your team. You know, the better you do, the better your selection is for the Olympics. So we'll talk about Taylor in a little bit. Quite disappointed. Once again, just came to my mind, why wasn't he participating this year? I probably didn't qualify, but I don't think he's even attempting to. So the teams that came out on the Netherlands, you had Amy Peters, Jos van Inden, Lucinda Brand, Cohen Bowman, Rianne Markens, and Bakke Mollemer. And that was the solid team there for the Netherlands. They all seemed happy. Germans were Lisa Klein, Niels Pollitt, Mikael Kroger, Yasha Sunderland, Lisa Brunmeier, and Tony Martin. Solid team there as well. And we'll just finish it off. Oh, you know, I think it was Italy that missed out. They had Elia Viviani, Elisa Longo Borghini. They had a pretty good team as well, but the Great Britain in third. Let's go to the junior time trial. I'm just going to kind of knock off some of these results, and then we're going to talk about, you know, highlight the Americans for us and give some of the, there was a bit of controversy, and then we'll talk about the road race as well. And the junior women, Russian Agu Gariva wins that of 3 seconds over the Netherlands Sharon van Andruj, 10 seconds over Eleanor Backstead of Great Britain. I think that's the Backstead that used to ride Magnus. I believe that's and he wasn't a Great Britain, but I believe his national it is, and I'm pretty sure that's his daughter getting third there. We had an American, Zoe Taperez of the USA, 25 seconds back in seventh place. Pretty solid. And you're going to see that with the Americans, juniors and U23s, all the way up through the elite women. The elite men, not so much. Junior men, Antonio Tiberi of Italy wins that in a 38-28 time. Enzo Lindsay of the Netherlands, 8 seconds. Marco Brenner, Germany, 13 seconds. And Quinn Simmons, just a little, the junior that looks like a man, 20 seconds back in fourth place. Very solid showing, and just a pretense of things to come. U23, the women do not have a U23 division, so we're going to skip any kind of results because didn't have any there. U23 men, Mikael Berg of Denmark, 40-20 for his time. Ian Garrison of the United States in second, 26 back, and Brandon McNulty 27 seconds back for the United States. So the U.S. goes 2 and 3, and I think Ian Garrison, I think his brother Michael Garrison, I want to say, is a junior rider for the U.S. as well. Could be just the fact they have the same last name. I haven't done any double checking on that, great results by those two. And I think Berg rides for, he had at least Action Berman. He still may, or I'm not sure if he went up. But so quite the little smattering there. great time. I mean, Brandon McNulty, I think he's going to UAE this next year. I believe that's the gentleman that is going there. I could be incorrect. Then we go to the elite women. Look, this was the rager of the race. And we're going to talk about Rowan Dennis. He ends up winning the elite men. And we can talk about the time stamp that he put over his riders. But Chloe Dygert puts in time. She wins a minute 32 over Anna van der Breggen. 152 over Annemiek van Vleuten. And 238 over Amber Leon Naben of the U.S. Those are huge gaps on incredibly talented women. I mean, Anna van der Breggen, Annemiek van Vleuten, to the Netherlands, two of the biggest stars that have been out in cycling for the last several years. And Chloe puts a minute, almost 2 minutes on one and a minute and a half on the other. And 2:30 on her own teammate, who's no slouch at the time trial as well. Incredible. This actually is, for me, is kind of a redemption in a way. And it's a redemption really for me because it's really what it's about. But I had made comments about the Colorado race and how her dominance there was actually a factor that bothered me. It bothered me for a few cents, and it still does in one way, but that she was so dominant over the mountains, over the sprints, over the circuits, for someone who's not a climber, it was a little bit questionable. And now the field in the Colorado Classic was pretty diminished. You know, I've talked about this where they're riding 7-8 across on the road trying to chase her. There's nothing single file. It was pretty pathetic. And so when she has such a dominant role, you start to maybe question her. But when she comes out in the World Championships and just throttles everybody, you're like, okay, well, maybe her performance there, one, it was dominant for the fact that she is a dominant rider. To the field is what it was, but on the world tour level, she really was ready for this. And coming out of the Colorado race, I think she just had some fitness that was ridiculous. Awesome to see her after her crash a few years ago. We saw that out in Elk Grove. She crashed really hard coming into the finishing sprint. Before the finish, we saw her coming across the line. She didn't look so good. She'd gone down pretty hard. And you know, it was a bigger deal. I think it's somewhat of a concussion, some problems with that, and it took her a while to recover. She's done great with that. Really had a big, strong win up at Chico and the Colorado Classic. So good for her and dominating performance on the world stage. So she's the world champion of the individual time trial for the women. Also, it was interesting of note that she said she didn't run a power meter. She just kind of rode by feel, RPE, I think you'd call it. And or PRE, or perceived real effort, or something like that. Anyway, it was really good to see her do that. I don't know how she did it. She just kept ramping it up. You're thinking, oh, she's maybe going out too strong, but she just kept blowing the field away. Similarly, you had Rowan Dennis of Australia and Bahrain Merida. Is he still? He was riding, I believe, a BMC bike. And, you know, Merida is the sponsor. And I think that has something to do with what happened to his. We'll talk about him in the transfer market coming up. But Rowan Dennis puts a minute and five on Remco Evenepoel of Belgium. Now, Remco is what, 19? First year in the World Tour. He's had some wins. I think he's the world or the European time trial champion. Then he comes out with a silver medal. So that kid is going to be danger. When he's 19 and he's put in second place, doing pretty solid there. Now, only losing a minute five to Rowan Dennis. Filippo Ganna of Italy was 155 back. Then you had Patrick Bevan. He was in the hot seat for quite a while, almost 2 minutes at 157. Alex Dowsett, Lawson Craddock, sixth place at 207. Solid ride for him and pretty good last bit of the season for him as well. You know, he did really good multiple, I want to say seventh places, like three top seven in the Vuelta. So he had a pretty solid end of the season. Tano Kanger, Nelson Oliveira, 209. Tony Martin, 227. He's just not the rider he used to be. I'm just going to go down to 12 here because Stefan Kung at 246 for 10th place. Victor Campenaerts, he's the world hour time trial record holder at this point. Gets 249 put into him by Rowan Dennis. Primoz Roglic, 3 minutes. I don't know if Primoz was really... He'd just come off of the Vuelta, so you don't really, and he had formerly got what, second, I believe, silver medal to Dumoulin at the 2016, I want to say, World Championships. in Norway. So, you know, look, he's no slouch on the time trial. So getting through, and I think actually he was sprinting on the finish as Rowan Dennis is passing him at the finish line. And Rowan Dennis actually posts up. It's a little bit much, Rowan. Come on. But anyway, pretty solid performance there. Putting it into perspective, putting a minute on Evenepoel while Chloe Dygert puts a minute 30 on Vanderbruggen. Impressive. Now we go to the road race. Look, the road race comes up and some bad weather. I watched the full men's, the junior men's road race. And what a spectacle. I'll get to that. But first of all, let's just start off with the junior women. Comes down to a little bit of a field sprint. And American Megan Jastrup of the United States gets the win over Julie Dewald of Belgium and Leuk Nguyen of the Netherlands. Amazing. Junior woman, world champion. Very impressive to see. And then we go to the men's road race. And look, I watched this. And that team, Quinn Simmons was the all-in-all out favorite. They're talking about it the entire race. They've got, I think it's four riders in the race there. You have him, Quinn Simmons. You have, let's see if we can get all of them. Michael Garrison. You have Matthew Ritticelli. There's got to be one more because there was four of them in here, and I thought they were. Oh, and Magnus Sheffield. Okay, all four of those riders were doing everything they could to control the race. They were on the front. It looked like, you know what, they actually rode very much what you'd call like sky type performance, all day controlling it, doing everything they could. These guys, Sheffield was the man on the front. This kid looks like he's a little bit stocky. He was just doing everything he could, and I'm gonna say about 25 or so K. They're going downhill. The whole team's on the front, and there's a little pitch, and they're hitting it, and there's a little bit of a gap. And Quinn Simmons, he has Sheffield with him, and he's just yelling, "Go, go, go!" And there's like what, three or four or five of them, and they just put the hammer down. Quinn starts pulling through, and he and Sheffield, there's a 10 second break. There's a little bit more, and finally, what I want to say 20 K. You know, I think that's around the 30 K mark. It's around 20 K, 15, 20 K. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was a bit more than 10. Okay. Quinn Simmons decides to punch it up one of the climbs. Guys are having trouble. Sheffield actually looks like he might be able to come with him. Kind of sits up, sits on the next guy. And then Quinn holds about a 30, 40 second gap. And those riders are trying to the whole field is shattered. They're trying to bring him back. The Americans are all up in the front once again. And then he ends up extending it. He ends up winning by 56 seconds. Now that 56 over Alessio Martinelli of Italy, that was probably, it was over a minute, I think a minute 20 at one point. And Quinn really just took his time in the last, you know, last kilometer of celebrating it, grabs a flag, puts it around his neck, those kind of things. But Magnus Sheffield of the United States comes in with a group of 3 through 6 there and wins the field sprint for the third place. That kid was ridiculous all day, both he and Quinn Simmons. But, you know, let's even go deeper because 12th place was Michael Garrison. And 17th place was Matthew Ritticello at a minute 48. You had all four Americans in the top 20 on this junior road race, and they rode ridiculous. They were on the front. They were expected to win. Quinn Simmons in his full-on beard was expected to win, and he did, and he won it in dominating fashion. They come out with a silver or the bronze medal as well in third place. Once again, 12th and 17th, those other two riders kept it within 2 minutes. Unbelievable. I'm really proud of these guys because it wasn't just you know, they got the win. The whole team was on the front, drilling it the whole time, controlling the race, doing everything they had to, and they were just dominant. And it was really impressive to see. You know, it's not impressive if you're one of those other countries. It's not impressive if you it's impressive, but it's not exciting if you're, you know, like the other team opposite of Sky and you're getting dominated like that. But it is something to see when you've got the genuine favorite, the genuine strong man, and he's doing, he's dictating to his team how they could go. You know, he's telling his riders, Sheffield, to hit it and hit it hard when they had a little bit of a gap, and it just stretched the whole field. The whole field was already in disarray from pretty decent climb that the Americans had been on the front, and then when they just torqued it a little bit more. It was impressive to see. It was impressive. I don't know if he's getting something in his earpiece. I don't even know if that's allowed at the race. But Quinn Simmons obviously was dictating things quite well. He knew what to do. I believe he's the one that beat. He won the last stage at Redlands with Corey. I'm slipping on his name. The one that had a an issue. The one ended up winning Redlands overall, but I think that's Quinn Simmons also, was it Liège Best Liège or one of those other classics that he won this year as well. So obviously he's got some star power and he knows what he's doing. And once again, it'd be cool to talk to Sayers, maybe get some concept of what all took place there. I don't know if he was in the car, but I know he has a lot to do with those guys. Once again, congratulations. On the U23, once again, no women's division for that. So we go straight to the men. Samuel Battistella of Italy wins that in 3 hours and 53 minutes, 52 seconds over Stefan Bissiger of Switzerland and Thomas Pidcock of Great Britain. No Americans in the top 20 on that one. I think 43rd was Kevin Vermaak. Now, we'll get to, there's a little controversy here. The actual winner of the race was Nils Eckhoff of the Netherlands, and he gets DQ'd after the race. There's a break of 7. He ends up winning the field sprint. About an hour or so, they say, no, you're not him. So what was the deal? Well, earlier on, there had been a wreck or some sort, and he ends up getting DQ'd, they said, for a sticky bottle and drafting. There is a video out there, and, you know, people get kind of worked up, you know, sticky bottles are questionable. But he's on – I watched that last night. There's at least, it's 2 minutes of him sitting on a team car. And I mean, like, you know, he's full on as tight as you can be to that team car drafting for well over 2 minutes. There's just a motorbike with a camera on him and it's a bit much. I mean, I get it if you're moving up and you're helping or you're going through the caravan, but this guy is flying through other riders. And at some point you're just kind of like, okay, this is too much. You just can't. I'm sorry. You're not going to, something happened. You know, there's other kids there that are, you're flying past. The trouble too is, look, this just, it seemed a bit over the top. And, it's kind of the whole idea of it, when you got that kind of that cringe moment and you just think something doesn't feel quite right, then it's probably something that isn't quite right. And so the bummer is he gets DQ'd. I don't know. Maybe if it would have, if he would have still got back up to the group, but then again, he probably doesn't have the effort to be able to make the break. He doesn't have the effort to be able to win the sprint. So, you know, them's are the breaks. And, unfortunately for him, he gets DQ'd. But, after looking at the video, I think it was the right call. Just because it just was a little bit too much. And the women, you get 1 and 2. They finally are able to dispel themselves of the Chloe Dargart from the previous time trial, and they do a little swap here. Annemiek van Vleuten of the Netherlands wins the road race 2 minutes 15 seconds over Anna van der Breggen and Amanda Spratt in third place at 2:28. But Chloe Dargart, 3:24 in fourth place. Dude, this is all shattered up. It's like 1-2s. Elisa Borghini, 4:45 in fifth. Marianne Vos, 5:20 back in sixth place. So this thing just was shattered to no ends. Coyne Rivera ends up 10th place at 5:20 in the field there. Look at the stars though. Passio, Bartonelli, Lisa Brunauer, Vos, Borghini, Dygert, Spratt. I mean, these all the top cream of the crop for the women's elite road race. Coyne Rivera. I mean, you can't get much better than that. So big, big props to Chloe Dargart and Corn, 2 in the top 10. Once again, the Americans, only one we really haven't talked about for any of them is the U23 road race. So and then we go to the elite men. The elite men didn't see much of this race. I was in Cabo. But after reading up on it, you got had a little break there. You had Mads Pedersen of Denmark winning that over Mateo Trentin. Look, Mateo Trentin had come in there, then winning a bunch of races, getting beat out. We just talked about that by Matthew Vanderpoel a few weeks ago. He had looked really good, and you kind of expected him on this kind of race to do well. Stefan Kung, 2 seconds back in third place. Johnny Moscon, 17 seconds. Interesting story about Moscon. He said that this year during the Tour de France that he gained 10 pounds or something like that, something ridiculous. So I don't know. I guess he put that aside, was able to. Peter Sagan, 5th place, 43 seconds. Valgren, Christoph, Van Avermaet, Gorka Izaguirre, and Rui Costa. That's the top 10 there. Now I know that I think Chad Haga and Nielsen Palace finished, but I think they were hung in till like the last bit there. It came off on the, so anyway, good for Nielsen Palace, being able to do that race. I'm not sure where Worlds is next year, but It'd be nice to start seeing in the elite men, the U.S. being able to at least be close. You know, last year we didn't have an American, but we had Michael Woods, who's an adopted American, on our team, on the EF Education First team, American team. And he's also a Canadian. So he's close enough. So we'll kind of take that. And he was, second or third there to Valverde. Valverde did not finish this race, had some bad weather. Some guys coming off tired. You know, he's probably coming off tired. This wasn't his particular race anyway. But Mads Pedersen, look, I hope Mads rides for Team Trek, Trek Segafredo. I hope he kind of comes through and shows his pedigree this year, kind of steps himself up. Once again, I've mentioned I dislike, this is the problem you have. You know, it's kind of the Johan Bernil thing that we were talking about. When you get kind of a no-name winning the world championships, there's the they talk about the world championship curse of you winning that and then you don't win anything as a world champion. Well, I think it's when you just get someone who's only going to win two or three races their whole career, okay, and that happens to be one of them. The odds of them winning more are just not going to happen, and then you get a little pressure of them being the world champion. Valverde, he won plenty of this year in his world championship kit. You know, you get a sprinter, Mark Cavendish, she's going to win plenty enough as well. It's just when you get kind of the one-offs and, you know, same people we always talk about, but Mads Pedersen, hopefully you step it up and, show us what you can do for Trek this next year. Okay. That was Worlds, pretty entertaining. Once again, is this American Renaissance? You got to think so with all the top podiums that we got there. I mean, gold medals, I don't know that we've ever had. I'm just throwing this out without having done my research, but can anybody else remember a time when we were pretty much, we being Americans, were all over the podiums all the way up and down? I mean, the only one, look, we missed out on the women's elite by one spot with Chloe Dygert on the road race. No men in the elites. But we had the juniors, both gold medals, silver or bronze in there as well. Time trials, men are on the podium, women are on the podium, women are winning the world. It's incredible. Usually you're looking for one person to get a medal on all of those events. Look, the team mixed gender time trial, a little disappointing, but maybe we'll work on that one next year. Esports scandal, rock cycling. Okay, what's esports? Well, most of you are probably aware of this, but of those of you that aren't, there's this thing called, well, esports. What is it? It's gaming online. It's a big deal. You know, you've heard of PewDiePie, maybe one of the biggest YouTubers. They make millions of dollars. They basically game. They're doing Willie Myers. We talked about him, where he's done, you know, video games as a team, and they have competitive stuff. Well, now you're doing it with sports. And we talked to a gentleman before that runs an esports program. This one specifically is with Zwift. Zwift is, you put your bike on a trainer, you're able to hook it up to a virtual, you can do a virtual machine or your computer, but a virtual racing scenario, and you can have a course, and it has, you know, if you have a smart trainer, it'll change the resistance on your trainer as you're going hills and downhills. And anyway, they have a power meter, it shows your power, and they really do it by watts per kilogram. In other words, how many watts you're able to generate in power divided by your weight. And so you got to do weight in there as well. Anyway, they're now competing. They're having, whether you get up and they're having national championships. And Britain last year had a national champion, and it was Cameron Jeffers. He won the national championships for Zwift 2018. Yay, everything's cool. But he was recently fined €250 and not eligible for racing for 6 months and banned from all cycling from the British cycling. So what the heck happened? So when I read this headline, I'm like, oh, great. You got a doper in, Zwift, or maybe he was cheating on his weight. You know, that's kind of the thing you do. Makes it look like you can go so much better. But when they're doing these things, they're actually doing live they're actually at the event. They're not like piping in from their home. So how was he able to cheat? Well, what it came about was he was stripped of his national title. The dastardly deed he did was he ended up leveling up months before this thing, like 6 months or so before, and got what they call a Tron bike. Now, Tron bike is a special type of, look, it's like all these games. You do certain things, you get different bikes you can ride on there. I guess different ones are more aerodynamic. Other ones are supposed to be faster. And in his case, he had someone with an Ant Plus device that was able to modulate you know, some stuff and ran it on the computer for like an hour. And he did the 50,000 feet, I think it was, or maybe it was meters of climbing. And once you do that, it unlocks a special bike. So there's different, I guess, levels you can get up to. So he gets this bike. Now they go and do the world championships or the national championships. He's using this bike and he had ill-gotten gains of, well, he had gotten this bike illegally, supposedly, right? He does this whole race. He ends up winning. Then they have someone, I don't know, checking in or something happened and it gets called out and he admits to it. And so he gets it taken away. Now, my first thought on that is you're having a, and I know it's, this is this is where, why I'm even bringing this up. You want this to be a serious event, right? They're making a big deal about it. I know guys are making money doing this kind of thing and you get a national championships and he's, you know, the national champion jersey and you, British Cycling is making a big deal about it, but you're going into a national championships being, with, you know, your avatars or your bikes that you're earning on there. Why is not everyone starting with the same bike? That's kind of the question. So it's something that you've earned coming up there. That's like, okay, well, in this previous race, I beat this guy by, you know, 20 seconds. So I get to start the national championships with a 20 second time bonus. That's to that me, it seems weird. Or, you know, look, I have a lighter bike than him and he's now wants a lighter bike, but he's not able to do it. So is what's weird about it is that you're not all going into this with the same exact situation. So I know everyone's different with weight and you have these other prospects, but you think like a bike, now Jeffers. So the point was he didn't acquire this bike in a legal manner. To me, I should think that everyone should be given that kind of bike to begin with. Now, but then again, I'm not really big into this esports, so maybe someone can explain this to me. But then again, he knows this, getting this bike is a big deal and he got it incorrectly. So one, what I'm really saying is, I'm more mocking this esports thing due to this whole concept. And then this is what Kurt says, you know, look, the British Cycling's taking a big deal about this, but they don't seem to, you know, I would differ. He says, and Froome is doped to the gills. Now, one, I don't know if that's the case. Two, there was a whole investigation into his, it wasn't salbutamol, was it? Maybe it was his whole scandal with that. And so that one's kind of taken, but it is weird to see the differences. You know, they're measuring sock levels. Once again, Evenepoel in the time trial, they go and measure his socks and they're like, your socks are too high, buddy. So he rolls them down. Then they measure and they say, that's good. And then he pulls them back up when he starts and nothing happened. I don't know. Cameron Jeffers, he did a little video weighing in on this and he was like, hey, you know, here's some other things that didn't happen during national championships that were supposed to, you know, weigh-ins were supposed to be, you know, like an hour and a half before competition. They were done like 9 hours before. There's all these other things that didn't happen and they picked this one. Yeah, I get it. Okay. You did cheat and get this bike that you weren't supposed to. Once again, I think that just calls out kind of the absurdity of your event here rather than the absurdity of getting caught because, you know, or the holding to the standards. And now look, the sucky part is everything's all over the internet that this guy cheated. He did. But is it something I'm going to be too concerned about? No, that's the way it goes. All right. Let's talk about the transfer market. A few little things we'll throw up in. Look, there's a lot I'm missing, I'm sure, but, we'll just throw a few little things out here. I heard Nate Brown, EF, is going to Rally. Oof. I don't know. He formerly had, what was it? The 17 Tour de France. He was in the climbers jersey for a while. He's a decent rider. Why? At least he's got a contract. I did hear that Taylor Finney has not got a contract. And my comment was going to be, why is Taylor still on EF and someone like Nate Brown gets kicked out? And I say kicked out, he's just not signing, you know, staying on that level. I'm sure he would like to, but he's getting kicked down to Conti status. And someone like Taylor Finney supposedly, you know, still may have a shot with EF and he doesn't even race. He doesn't ride. Maybe he does ride. But, you know, at least Nate Brown's out there supporting his team at all the races. So it'll be interesting to see him. You know, look, Raleigh's slowly moving up. So maybe Nate will have a chance to come back. But, man, when you kind of go down to that Conti level, it's difficult to get that move back up because you've already had the shot. Mattel Jorgensen, 20-year-old American, signed with Movistar. He had done a little stagiaire sprint stint with La France FDJR, I think. And so anyway, he gets a chance to go with Movistar. I don't know much about him. I didn't even know about him, actually. But I just did see that. Rowan Dennis, he's been sacked by Bahrain Merida. Just so you know, next year they're Bahrain McLaren. McLaren, you know, big into their aero car design. And now they're trying to come into the cycling. And look, it appears that part of his being demoted out of Bahrain was the fact that he didn't use any of their team stuff at Worlds. He wins the World Time Trial Champion, and then he's trying to get out of his contract too. Skipped out on the Tour de France. Was it stage maybe 10? I'm just guessing here, but it was a tour. It was a time trial where he was having a big fit over what, helmet, bike, wheels, about aero, saying he was not going to be able to win. Look, you put a minute plus on everybody in the world championships, that's probably not the bike. I doubt that's the bike alone doing it. So you probably win on my road bike. It seems kind of asinine for him to throw. Is he throwing his career away? I don't know. He just won the ITT at Worlds. Look, Rod Ellingworth, formerly of Sky, but now he's becoming the head of Bahrain Merida, said he wanted to keep him, but I guess it wasn't going to happen. You can't trash your sponsor outright saying, I will not use the bike. Now, then you don't sign with that team. When you sign with them and their title sponsor is Merida, you don't sign with them if you're going to have trouble or if they have a wheel sponsor like that. It's just the way it goes. Now Bahrain Merida are going to be Bahrain McLaren. They signed up Wapols. They have Nibali coming in. They're rumored to get Cavendish as well. I just read that yesterday that it looks like Cav is coming in. Who would sign Cavendish at this point? I don't know. Seems kind of odd, but I think maybe he's going to be coming in with Rod because he was big. He worked with Rod Ellingworth for years in the British cycling and at Sky. And maybe he's going to have a role there other than just being a sprinter Cavendish. I don't know, but it will be interesting to see what Cavendish can do this year. Israel Cycling Academy has officially merged with Katusha for the World Tour next year. They've also signed up James Pickley, remember, with who was Elevate KHS. He did, second place, I think, overall at the Tour Utah, won some stages. He was really good there. And I had mentioned at the time that he reminded me a lot of Mike Woods when Mike Woods was riding for Raleigh, and then he gets picked up by EF or it's Garmin at the time. And I was hoping the same would happen to James Pickley. That's obviously what happened. And so it'll be interesting to see who he can do this next year. Big move with him and his success at Utah, elevating him up to the World Tour level. Greipel is out at Arkea Samsic. Don't know where he's going, but I had heard that he is out. Arkea Samsic, Cofidis, Katusha, ICA, which is Israel Cycling Academy. They're new candidates for the World Tour Cycling Division. There's 20 teams that have applied. Rumor on the U.S. front, 303 Cycling is to quit, and Floyd's of Leadville will fold as well. Now, Floyd's of Leadville, you may remember, they got a bunch of their money from Floyd Landis, actually, on the lawsuit, the whistleblower lawsuit that he had with Lance Armstrong, and he got several million out of that, and he put it into the team. It looks like it was just enough for 1 year. They had some issues with Floyd's of Leadville, you know, supplier of cannabis, being out in Utah, and so they had Worthy Brewing coming in. Now, look, we can deviate real quick here on, and that's kind of all I had for the updates on the world transfer market. But let me go just to real quickly. There was a thing in the news because Floyd's of Leadville reminded me here that Floyd was last week there was rumor that. There's a news story, actually. The Johan Bernil was being visited by American lawyers or American police about, because they still owe the U.S. government $1.something million for the lawsuit. And some of that percentage would go to Floyd as well due to the whole whistleblower thing. Now, you look at it, and the story is like, hey, look, they're still trying to do this. They're trying to serve him with process. Their lawyers showed up at his house, and he refused to take the documents. Oh, my God. I'm imagining it's the same way. Well, like Spain, that's where I think he lives now. They're trying to serve him over there. But what we're looking at here is it's still a U.S. court. So I'm imagining the way I've done this myself when I've had to serve people in other countries. It's still your country yourself here is concerned about service of process. Okay. And now how can you hold them over there? Well, what you're doing is if he was refusing to take the documents, you can still lay him at his feet. You're like, here, take them. And if you can identify that was him and you spoke to him, whether he picks them up or not, doesn't matter. He's been served. And I imagine that's still the case. And so likely they were able to serve him. Now, reading some of the reports, it was like, oh, the U.S. is going over there and trying to arrest and do that. Well, no, it's just lawyers going over there trying to drop documents at him. But that doesn't really matter. So serving him is not necessarily the difficult part. The difficult part is to trying to get him over here. And is there going to be any kind of extradition of Spain forcing him over here? Probably not, with just a civil issue like that. I mean, if it was criminal, they may. So look, is he getting paid? Is he getting paid from the Lance Armstrong Move podcast? If so, maybe they go in through there and try to squeak out some of the funds from that direction. Who knows? Point is, I think he's personally been served, and we'll see what happens, the develop there. Maybe Floyd struts another team with some of the money he gets from Brumille, if he ever does. How about some things that make you go, hmm?
Things that make you go, hmm.
Few items here. I just saw Roompot Charles team is folding. This team have been around 5 years, or I think a squad from the Netherlands. They have Lars Boom. It was also the team last year that Wellens Krillin team had tried to merge with Aqua Blue. There was a whole skirmish and dust up about that because that was going to be the thing. And then it blew up in the process. And also Wellens like, oh, we're actually merging with Roompot. There we go. So they had merged with them last year, blew out Aqua Blue. And then it also this year, now it's blown out three teams in the process of Roompot and Verandas Wellen. Remember, Walt Van Aert had been with them, and he was able to get out of that contract and go with Jumbo Visma, which was a great deal for him this year. So anyway, there's some other issues. That team looks like it's going. Some of the riders are going elsewhere. They didn't really have that great a season, but I just thought it was somewhat interesting. One other item we'll talk about here is Florian Senechal from the Coyne Quickstep. He's apologized for his part in a dust-up with Max Walshied of Sunweb after Thursday's Sparkassen Musterland Giro. Okay, what happened? Basically, there's a sprint. De Koninck Quickstep rider wins in the sprint. It's really rainy. This Florian Senechal, he is leading his teammate out, and then he crashes on the wheel of Walshied. Walshied gets like maybe fourth. Max Walshied is being interviewed after the race, and Senechal comes up there and tries to hit him during the interview on camera, smacks him in the helmet, and Walshied is not having any of that, and he kind of smacks him back. So this Florian Senechal is actually, this was his apology, and then I'm going to get to the actual thing he should have apologized for. Quickstep doesn't condone Florian's behavior at the end of today's race. The matter has been dealt with internally, and Florian has been fined with the proceeds set to go to a charity organization. And then Florian himself says, "My heartfelt apologies to Max Walshied, Team Sunweb, my team, and my fans. What I did after the race was completely unacceptable, and it doesn't represent who I am. I am really sorry for this." Look, I actually watched the race. He's leading his teammate out. There's maybe a slight bend to the right. And as the Walshied starts to come past him on his left, Florian is getting passed on his right by his own teammate. He looks to his right. As he does so, he veers to his left. And as that's happening, Walshied's holding his line. Florian hits Walshied's back wheel and falls down, you know, big wreck there. Walshied doesn't go hit the ground, probably maybe slows his progress a bit. But I kept watching this. Florian is the one that deviated his line by looking to his right. He goes to the left. It's completely his fault. I mean, Walshied does absolutely nothing wrong. He holds his line just fine. Everyone else is doing it. But the move to his right, his head, moves his bike to the left, and that's how things go. He should be apologizing for his riding. He should not be hitting Walshied afterwards. Matter of fact, he deserved to go down. I probably shouldn't say that. No one really deserves to go down. But with the after effects of what he did. And look, the road does veer to the right a little bit. It was totally this guy's fault. And then he makes a big deal about it to everyone else. Complete victim after the fact, when he should have been taking some internal introspection of what happened there. Big loser, very sad, horrible ride. And he apologized for his actions after the race, but not during the race, which is what he should have done. All right, let's head to the mailbag. Let's get out of here and get you guys on your way for the next show. Okay. So we've got some mailbag. Some people have been writing in. Some people are awful people what they write, but it's all good. So let's take a look at Pescaterrier 1 week ago. He talked about I did a whole episode about Bernoulli and the Worlds. He says, I don't know who is capable to beat MVDP, Matthew Vanderpoel. Maybe the actual world champion Valverde can. Definitely one who has a powerful finish after such a long distance and has a climbing ability. This time the strongest will win, not the smartest. Okay, I don't think that happened this year. Strong Aussie team, and also France, Belgium, Germany also have strong riders and teams. I don't see UK in the medals as Froome isn't there and G is out of shape. That's very true. Denmark and Norway, outsiders. Are they? I don't see Evenepoel as a distance. Might be too long for him. Okay. Comes back to Matthew Vanderpoel. Well, I think Denmark won, right? Mads Pedersen. So good call in there. Look, I didn't have any good predictions. Who would have predicted Mads Pedersen? But otherwise, thanks for the comments there. Jason Gravath said, Hammer TT is pretty spot on. I had made the comparison that the gender, mixed gender team time trial was like that. Seems like kind of a silly hybrid. And then he said, I was also throwing some serious shade towards Bernoulli. Personally, I think having national teams is uniquely cool. Kind of like the Olympics every year where the winner gets a rainbow jersey instead of a gold medal. And I completely agree. I enjoy the world championships kind of the way it is. I understand Johan's concept of how it's kind of weird with the trade teams. And it is. And it's, I think it's tough for them riding that way. But I also think the riders all have enough of a national conglomerate feeling to them, because that's kind of the way cycling even is. Even though you're on your team, you're out there riding, it's still very much nationalist stuff. And so you get the world championships, you get them a chance to ride this way. Look, UCI likes this because it's a moneymaker for them. The teams don't like it because they're putting sponsorship dollars in. Once again, the economics of cycling makes everything unique, and it's just a different world. Chris Helios, Hunting Synth says, no USA team for mixed team time trial. Bull S. I agree. We talked about that. What about Froome? I had mentioned way back on episode 127. Some people are still checking that episode out. Froome, 2011 champ. This guy was up with Dat One. Mofiki. All right. That's his username. Chris got handed a win from a race 8 years ago. Who cares now? It's not going to earn him any more money from his current sponsors. Totally true, but we're just reporting on the news. You don't think it's newsworthy that Chris Froome has handed a race 8 years ago? I like to look in the future and say, who's going to get Chris's races in 8 years? All right. Nick Burak wrote this on similar comment. It's about Chris, as people, there was comments out there about Chris Froome faking a crash, which I thought I debunked fairly well. I still think I did, especially after you could see the scars in his leg now. I don't know why he had those scars implanted and surgically put on there just to make it look like he had a crash. Is that what we're saying? This guy says, it's all fake. Your eyes are fake. My brain is fake. Well, that part may be true. You think this video is real? Enter the twilight zone of fake news. And he says, ah, but seriously, I hope that Chris Froome makes an excellent recovery. But I don't think this channel will fare as well. Kurt, was this you making this comment? I don't know. Now, look, I said put down your copy of Michel Foucault, and come back to Earth. You know, this is not postmodernism. I believe that these things really do happen, and what we're seeing here is correct. This channel won't go away soon, sir. We are here to give you the best cycling insights around. True. That's our response. So, look. Chris Froome, I think he didn't fake it. There's a lot of crashes out there. We just saw today there was a U23 rider went down in a race. He's now died. Pretty sad. Those things are real. You know, the prospects of what we do on a bike have real repercussions for our family and our friends. We're not climbing Everest. We're not doing super dangerous stuff. But you know, you're trusting a bunch of people out there every day in the same race, you know, riding next to you. Sometimes there's traffic on group rides. It can be dangerous. So, you know, do the best out there you can. And to take the idea that someone is going to do that and fake it just seemed a little bit over the top to me. How about some winners and losers? Okay. Some winners. Look, American Cycling and Mads Pedersen specifically for him is a big win because elite world champion is probably the biggest deal. But the biggest winners out of the world are the American Cycling, the juniors. The time trial in the U23, Chloe Dygert. In general, and I hope that just feeds this process. And like I said, I need to talk to Mike Sayers about kind of their whole junior and U23 process and how that is feeding into this winning aspect. And maybe it can, you know, infect itself up into the higher ranks. And, you know, we had Sepp Kuss, we had Niels Paulus doing pretty well at the Vuelta. Ben King has been doing well over the last few years. We just need to get someone who can finally start to challenge on our world, Grand Tour and a world championships. Losers, Rowan Dennis. Is there a bigger loser than Rowan Dennis? I say that, and yet he won the... Look, this is how big of a loser he is. He wins a world time trial championships. He's a world champ, posts up over the finish. He and his wife are all happy. And he loses his team because he's such a dick. I mean, he could have had a time trial champion in the Tour de France. He could have won that as well. He probably would have without a problem. He decides to make a big stink about it. And for what? I mean, this is, I don't know. So, also, there was a Merida bike. I don't think it would. I think he still could have won on that in the Tour de France. I think he could have won on that in the World Championships. But maybe that's going to be his. And look, if he had done the time trial in the Tour and not won, and then wins at Worlds on a BMC, then he has a better way of saying, "Look at me. Look what I could do. Look what I da da da." But instead, he doesn't have that comparison to do. It's just. We're all just speculating here. And so he's the biggest loser in my mind. Plus Merida, it'd be interesting to know what they're doing next year with McLaren. Not Merida. I don't know if they're having Merida bikes there, but if they are and they're Merida's coming in as a McLaren's coming in as a co-sponsor. The whole idea is aerodynamics and trying to get, you know, fast cars. And now we're going to use this with bikes. This is a great opportunity for him to help design a bike that he is going to be really good and comfortable and fast with. But no. Why? Because he's a soulless ginger? I don't know. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is episode 146. Once again, thank you for everything you do. Give us some more comments, some likes, share the show on all the social media platforms. You can find it anywhere out there. Podcasts are done. iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam, Overcast.fm. We're also on YouTube, the Between Two Wheels podcast on YouTube. Also find us on Instagram and Twitter at B2W_podcast. I'm Tyler Yonke. Thank you for tuning in. And once again, enjoy your ride.